Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Live from the Nasdaq market site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. Falling at 5%, the 10-year yield topping 5% early this morning, but then dropping, doing about face, a nearly 20 basis point intraday move. Will this week's earnings break the bond market's vice grip on the stock market? We'll debate that. Plus, targeting Foxconn, Chinese authorities are investigating the Apple iPhone maker over taxes and land use. Is this Beijing flexing its muscle against Taiwan and the United States? We'll get the latest. And later, the Chartmaster will be along to break down his list of stocks that are stuck in a bear trap. He'll tell us how investors can break free from these unbearable names.
Oh, man.
I'm Melissa Lee, coming to you live from Studio B at the NASDAQ. I'm the desk tonight. Tim Seymour, Guy Dami, Julie Beal, and Mike Coe. We start off with markets rejecting a 5% 10-year yield in a big way. The benchmark Treasury hitting 5.02% early this morning, a new 16-plus year high, but then falling 17 basis points from those levels. It was the third straight day the 10-year hit and closed below that key psychological level. The catalyst, potentially two tweets from Bill Ackman, revealing he's covered his bond short, saying there's too much risk to remain short bonds at current rates. One sector of the market in particular seemed to like the yield move, and that would be mega cap tech. Look at the gains in names like Meta, Amazon, Microsoft, and Alphabet, all of which report earnings this week. So can the momentum keep going, or should you be worried about what the results will do to the stocks? It was a really interesting, I think, move in the bond market today.
100%. Yeah. When you see a 16 basis point move over the course of a few minutes, that's a staggering move. So let's dissect it for a second. And I listen. I'm not pretending to know what was Bill Ackman's head. Great trade, number one. I mean, he totally nailed it. But number two, I think he looks over the landscape and says, all right, a couple things are happening. The economy seems to be slowing, and the potential for geopolitical risk is escalating with each passing day. Both of those, in my opinion, would make yields go lower. So he says, you know what, the risk reward probably doesn't make sense here. I'm going to take off the trade. Good for him. I don't think, though, he top-ticked this one. I still think rates are going to move higher on the supply side of things. It might take a couple weeks now, given what's transpiring, maybe some of the unwind, but I still think yields are headed higher. I understand why he's doing it. I don't necessarily, though, think he's going to mark the top in yields.
So in other words, you go higher after the issuance is digested?
I believe so.
What do you think?
Well, the things that have caused yields to move higher have hardly really changed. So I agree with Guy. Bill Ackman has been very outspoken at different points. And I just think you got to a place, and we're going to have Jim Bianco on in a moment to really give some insights as a guy that was calling for this move. I think this pause makes a ton of sense. I think the fact of the matter is we also have equity markets this week that possibly, if you believe that some of these big names could disappoint a bit, we're going to get into that too. That would actually probably be bond friendly because these have been, you know, the telltales on the broader economy. What should worry you, and one of the bigger reasons why I think yields have been going higher, is that the 10-year JGB closed at a cycle high here. We're near 89 bips on the JGB. Weekend press was that they are actually going to give up that 1% barrier. I think that the distortion in the Japanese bond market has a lot to do with keeping yields down globally. And I think that's something that you really have to worry about. In fact, that is the biggest risk on the upside to U.S. Treasuries outside of some kind of extraordinary issuance dynamic we don't hear about. Because what Bill Ackman's talking about are risks that typically are safe haven drivers for U.S. Treasuries. So when we look at the equity markets and we look at what they did last week, doesn't surprise me that we got a little bit of a kickback today. Again, we saw the triple Qs. I think the charts on a lot of those mega cap tech stocks look decent. And as much as it's been easy to say, hey, they're holding the linchpin, the fact of the matter is, I think what we're going to hear this week is that those numbers are going to be right down the fairway for the most part. There are risks, but I do think that that's part of how you're playing this. You're not getting short these names. You're probably figuring out where you want to be long them and short other parts of the market.
Yeah, Mike, how are you feeling about mega cap tech? And if you think that yields are at least in the short term at a high or at a peak of some sort, then is that sort of an all clear for at least this trade to continue for a little bit longer?
I don't know. The options market isn't really signaling an all clear just on the rate side first. Let's just talk about that a little bit. I mean, for those who are following along at home and want to take a look at how long bonds behave, treasuries, that is, you can just look to an ETF like TLT. That thing is trading with a significantly higher options premium than SPY is. So right now, as far as the options market is concerned, treasuries are far riskier and more volatile than stocks are. And that's an environment where stocks haven't been particularly calm either. So that's one thing I would quickly point out. One of the things I also thought that was interesting, tail end of last week, you know, that's when we started to see a beaten up sector all of a sudden roll over again. And that was financials from mid Tuesday through the end of the week. And we did see some areas of strength in sort of the higher beta, higher growth areas, which suggests to me that investors are more interested in idiosyncratic growth than they are in sort of making a broader macro bet. So I think that what we're seeing in the bond market actually should be cause for some concern looking ahead.
Julie?
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. I think that it's becoming more and more of a stock picker's market where before, you know, we just had dumped so much money on the economy that everything was working pretty well because our consumer is so healthy. And now we're really separating the men from the boys or whatever else metaphor we want to use. And I think that that's really starting to play out. And you're seeing with earnings, you're seeing that in general, although expectations on sell side estimates are pretty low, I think on buy side, people have been pretty disappointed with ho-hum results. In order for your stock to go up, you need to not just report a good quarter, you need to clearly show strong guidance. And not a lot of companies feel really confident to do that. And what's happening in the bond markets is not giving them any kind of comfort whatsoever. Just the volatility is really enough to keep people on the sidelines holding their breath.
So we thought it'd be an interesting question to ask you guys, the traders, which stocks, which mega cap tech stocks you are most concerned about going into earnings, especially since we have a huge slate this week. And interestingly, Guy and Mike agreed on one name, and that would be the mega cap tech stock that has gained the most in the past 3 months, the past quarter. That would be Meta. Why?
Not an indictment on Facebook by all. I mean, valuation at this level is trading at a market multiple, probably 18 times next year's numbers, and you have revenue and EPS growth to back that up, it probably should be a higher multiple. I'm worried because if you think about who their advertisers are, small, medium-sized businesses, we're starting to see the Russell rollover, the micro caps rollover as well. Those represent, obviously, a lot of these small and medium-sized businesses. If there's a lag or a delay or a push forward in terms of their advertising dollars, Facebook will be the first one to feel it. So if you start to get some, I don't know, rhetoric or some talk around that slowdown, that could augur potentially poorly for the broader market, which is why I'm looking at Facebook. Not against in terms of where the stock is going, but in terms of the tell for the broader economy.
Mike, why'd you pick Meta?
I picked it actually. Part of that, I think, is some of the same reasons that Guy was just talking about. There's another one, too, of course, which is what is management going to do? You know, people often talk about some of these companies as having levers that they can pull to turn on or off profitability, to turn on or off free cash flow. This is a company that demonstrated they have those levers and they have used them. That's positive in one sense, which demonstrates that they can generate huge free cash flow. It's a negative when they elect to start pursuing things like the metaverse and throwing buckets of money at it. And suddenly you start seeing free cash flow drop to near zero as it did at the tail end of last year. And that's really what caused this swoon. So if we start to see management start talking once again about investing in some of their visionary projects, that, I think, is a potential risk. But the company is very cheap if they don't do that. And even with some of the pressures that Guy was just talking about, you know, they might actually get some flow from X, for example, which has obviously changed their algorithms. And I think some of the content creators might start moving to some of Meta platform instead.
In terms of turning on and off the spigot, that sounds like Amazon, which Julie is worried about. I mean, interestingly, Amazon is exposed. It's consumer facing on the retail side, but then it's also enterprise spending facing on the AWS side of things.
Yeah, and I think part of it, too, is for them, it's a little bit, they don't have quite as many variable costs as something like a Meta. And so I worry more about the level of kind of CapEx investment, hard dollars flowing out of that business in order to be as competitive as they can be in AI. I think there's a little bit of a thinner margin for them, no pun intended, on being able to weather any kind of storm in enterprise spending or the consumer. So I'm a little bit, I think, generally speaking, big cap tech, I think, has earned its premium multiples, broadly speaking, right? Because you're exposed to secular growth trends. These have excellent balance sheets. They are in businesses where it really pays to be big. But this is the one that I think is the most exposed to the consumer. And for that reason, I'm a little bit more concerned.
With all due respect, I think you guys are in D2 right now. I think D1 is Microsoft and Apple. That's right. That's a college.
Division one, division two.
It's a college.
He's basically calling us the JV, and he's the
Well, I'm not calling you the JV per se, but those companies, it's Microsoft. It's the second most important company in the world. It's the company that, to me, is in touch with the enterprise. They were the one that really almost even started the AI frenzy on some level with ChatGPT. They're the one that I think is the most resilient business model. And they're the one of the charts that, along with Apple, at the end of October and the beginning of October, really started to scare everybody and say, is the market falling out of bed? Their chart has done better than Apple's. I think the biggest issue with Microsoft is not that their earnings numbers are going to be difficult. I think Azure's been guided to mid-20s growth. I think it's probably what they're going to give you. It's that the street wants to be at 35 times on this. And that's, you know, relative to history, that's expensive. So it's the second most important company in the world. It's the second biggest company, certainly in terms of market cap. That's D1, folks. That's the one to be worried about. And that's the one that I think has the most on the line.
All right. For more on the rates and the markets, let's bring in market forecaster Jim Bianco, Bianco Research. Jim, great to have you with us. He warned, by the way, on Fast Money earlier this month that bond yields could race through 5% in the next couple of weeks, now believes they can go even higher despite today's reversal. How high are we talking about, Jim?
Well, if the yield curve is going to uninvert, and that seems to be what it's doing, and that means that the highest point in the yield curve will eventually become long-term interest rates, which is normal. Well, the highest point in the yield curve right now is six-month bills at 5.5%. So if we're going to completely uninvert the yield curve, and I think we're destined on to do that or somewhere along those lines, then it's got to go to at least 5.5% because the Fed has said that they're higher for longer. So I don't think that this move is quite over with just yet. I know everybody keeps asking me when the move is going to be over with, but I think that the problem that everybody faces is they forgot that 2009 to 2020 was the QE period. That was abnormal. They look at zero rates. They say, my God, we've come up 500 basis points. That's a lot. That's going to hurt things. No, the first several hundred of that was just getting back to some level of neutral. The last little bit of it has been restrictive. I don't think it's been restrictive enough to really hurt the economy. That's why later this week, we're going to probably report a 4% GDP after we had some pretty good numbers in jobs and with unemployment claims going under 200,000. So we're not really punishing the economy. And that's why I think these markets have room for rates to continue to move higher.
And laying out the case to 5.5%, Jim, you didn't mention Treasury issuance. You didn't mention the Bank of Japan. And I'm wondering how those two factors factor into 5.5%.
Well, they don't help the situation that, you know, Treasury issuance is going to be more of a shift from short term to long term. So it's not that we're going to be issuing more than what we've expected. It's that we've issued a lot of Treasury bills after the debt ceiling was lifted. That was 4 or 5 months ago. Now they're maturing and the Treasury wants to kind of issue more 3-year, 5-year, 10-year notes. And so that's going to help put upward pressure on long rates. The Bank of Japan, remember now, Japanese are the largest foreign holder of Treasury securities in the world, not China. So if they are going to loosen up and let their rates go up, Japanese investors are going to say, you know what, our own JGBs, their Japanese government bonds, look more attractive. They'll sell Treasuries, they'll move back to Japan, and then we're going to see a dampening of demand from one of the largest buyers of Treasuries in the world.
Hey, Jim, Tim, yeah, I agree with that. But great call a couple weeks ago on our show. It was probably 3 weeks ago. You said they're going higher. They've gone higher. You also have pointed out that you think it's not just Japanese institutional buyers or even the Bank of Japan. It's that a lot of investors were on board with this recession argument and that a lot of people have actually capitulated. That's the term I think I've heard you use. Talk to me about that. Where do you think positioning is now? Because it seems to me like everybody thinks yields are going higher, even though, you know, it's a conversation you were having a few weeks ago and certainly a couple months ago. This isn't where people were. They weren't talking about 4% GDP. How much of this in the institutional and in the retail world is something that you think actually might be why we could get more of a pause right now?
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, the problem with positioning is there's FinTwit talk and there's what people say and everybody says it's going to go higher. Then if you look at where the way that people are positioned, I like to joke that they're up at night staring at the ceiling going, my God, there's going to be a big bond rally without me. And that's why you see this relentless flow in the TLT. And that's why you see this relentless amount of call buying in TLT. In the last month, there's been 1.5 million calls purchased in TLT and something like 400,000 puts. That's why you continue to see surveys like the Bank of America Global Fund Manager Survey having the highest amount of people in the 20-year history saying the next 100 basis point move is going to be lower. So that's why I say there's got to be some kind of capitulation. Everybody is waiting, begging. They're trying to position for this big decline in interest rates, and it doesn't happen, and they keep getting punished while they're waiting for it. And we all know the way markets work is when it happens is when no one's positioned for it. And so I still think that there's got to be some more capitulation in this bond market, which is why I don't think this move is over. Now, maybe for the next couple of weeks, we churn sideways around 5%. But ultimately, I still think we're going to go higher and see a capitulation.
Jim, always good to see you. Thank you.
Thank
you. Jim Bianco, Bianco Research. 5.5% by Jan 1. How does that factor into seasonality, Guy? Or dare we call, you know, in terms of the Santa Claus rally.
We're actually in your turkey day.
Come on. Can't we wait for Halloween at least to get into? No. That was one of the great episodes of all time when I turned you and just said boo. We should find that in the archive.
Oh, man.
Well, I don't adhere to seasonality necessarily, but I'll play your reindeer game and say if we see 5.5% over the next few weeks, the equity market will not like that. And we will be, where are we close, 43 and change, 4,300. We will be testing 4,000 under those set of circumstances that Jim just talked about.
For the record, I was going to just ask you, where do stocks go with yields of
5.5%? I'm in your head.
But I wanted
I'm
to
in
do
your head.
Rally.
Of course you did.
All right, let's get to NVIDIA meantime. Reportedly planning to team up with ARM to make chips for PCs. The news taking a bite out of Intel and AMD shares. Christina Parsonellis has got the details here on set. Christina.
Well, Reuters reporting that both NVIDIA and AMD are looking to build these central processing units for personal computers by 2025. This is a space normally dominated by Intel. NVIDIA, though, on the other hand, dominates the GPU space. You know, those graphics chips that we keep talking about needed for AI models. So CPU chips for NVIDIA would be a new avenue. Those chips would also use ARM architecture, which is why ARM stock jumped on the news. And I know a lot of people get confused with all these names. Think of ARM like a coding language in which companies like NVIDIA, Electronic Arts, Apple use to design their own chips. That ARM language is so good, it helped Apple make custom chips for its Mac computers. So that means ARM specializes in the blueprint for these PC chips. But the problem is, so does Intel with its x86 architecture. So think of it like two languages, ARM versus x86. And that's why Intel posted its worst day in a month. AMD also plans to create a CPU chip for PCs using ARM architecture, and yet the stock fell. So why is that? Well, AMD already makes PC chips using Intel's language. And so there are fears that this new chip could cannibalize the old AMD PC chip. Qualcomm, another company that wasn't mentioned in this report, but they've been saying for quite some time that they too plan to build a PC chip. And we should get more details tomorrow at their annual summit, just around 3 p.m. when he makes the keynote. All of these new PC chips, though, mean eroding market share for Intel. And that's why you're seeing the negative reaction. NVIDIA, AMD declined to comment, though.
Where does Microsoft fit in, right? Because
chips, a good point, too, that these particular chips that NVIDIA would be working on would work with the Microsoft infrastructure as well, sir.
Yeah, so we'll get some more details tomorrow because there's going to be an event that Microsoft is holding tomorrow to reveal some more of the details here. What do you think of this? It's very interesting.
Very interesting. KP breaking it down. All right, so go back to August. NVIDIA traded down to 409, huge bounce. Go back to September. Traded down to 409, huge bounce. What was the low today?
409.
Thank you, Tim, for playing. Well, I appreciate you playing.
Ose was here.
No, Ose is not here. But 409 again, and we bounced. So you have something to trade against in the form of that level. Big volume day. And let me be clear. I'm not bullish in NVIDIA, but the stock declared itself to have support. That's how you trade this name.
Can Intel get through this, Mike Coe?
Intel's got some problems. You know, it seemed like they were working their way out of it. You know, they sort of went to sort of more business-focused management rather than product-focused management, didn't have the engineering team in the C-suite, and that obviously proved to be a problem. You know, one of the things I look to is, you know, if you go and you take a look at a new machine, once upon a time, they put a little sticker on them, you may remember, and everybody advertised about having Intel inside. Now the big thing that everybody cares about, as you were previously talking about, are the GPUs. So when you buy a new laptop and it's got a powerful NVIDIA processor and it's going to say something like GTX Force or something like that on it, I mean, if they start moving into Intel's territory, I just find it very difficult to believe they're going to be able to fight their way out of that one easily.
It's interesting to hear Microsoft get in the fray, too, and pretty much say, hey, guys, you know, you better have the chips ready to power new AI Windows. And they have the ability to push this around. The only thing that's more extraordinary about NVIDIA's 380% move or 180% move this year is, I think, how it's held in. I mean, that 17% pullback off of that kind of a move, and the fact that semis threw a lot of difficult questions about the economy, valuations and whatnot, I think those charts are still holding up. I don't love all the good news we've priced in there, and I'm not telling you it's going up forever. I'm telling you, based upon what the market has done, so far you have to give that pullback and that bounce off of
409.
A
it's funny you
plus.
Say that. Formula 409. Yeah. I mean, KP, you use Formula 409? I'm a big fan.
I don't
fan.
Even think it exists anymore.
Yeah, come on,
really?
Tim.
I don't think, yeah, I mean, I think Windex just cleaned their clock.
No, it did not.
It just did, actually.
No. Well, we'll find out in the break. Christina,
minds.
Thank you. Always nice to see you. Christina Partsonopoulos. Coming up, more M&A action in the oil space. Chevron inking a huge deal to buy Hess for more than $50 billion. More on what this buyout could mean for the sector. That is next. Plus, crypto cruising higher, Bitcoin topping $31,000, and some names in the space are jumping on this move. How options traders are playing that action straight ahead. Don't go anywhere. Fast Money's back into.
Wouldn't it be great to have all your investment and retirement accounts in one place? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, makes it easy. I use it to put my investment account and 401k accounts into one hub and get expert tips that help me confidently manage my money. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or are looking for that extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. Securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
This extends our visible growth profile into the 2030s. We've got leading shareholder distributions. Our dividend growth has been 6% per year over the last 5 years, double that of our nearest peer. We announced the intent to raise our dividend 8% in the first quarter of next year, increase our share buyback to $20 billion a year. We're returning cash to shareholders and still see relatively low multiples compared to the rest of the market. So we think there's a lot of upside.
That was Chevron CEO Michael Wirth on CNBC earlier today talking about what the Hess deal will bring to shareholders, the stock dropping nearly 4%. While Hess was down over 1% on the news, the announcement of the oil mega merger follows Exxon's bid for Pioneer Natural earlier this month. Mike, what'd you make of this deal?
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty interesting. Obviously, they're making a play for, you know, one of the industry leaders. And, you know, the entire space, he was indicating that, you know, they feel like they're cheap to the market. They're very cheap to the market. And, you know, what's kind of interesting to me is that if you take a look at the big integrated players, Exxon was always the one that traded at a premium to the rest of the group, usually a turn or two over Chevron and Conoco. They're all basically sort of equally valued right now. That's looking at the U.S. integrated names specifically at about 11 times earnings. And if you take a look at their valuations relative to their proven, you know, both developed and undeveloped reserves, these companies seem like they're reasonably priced to me here. Although I will say that some of the offshore integrated oil companies are even cheaper. You know, we don't happen to own any of the U.S. ones. We do own BP, though, and that one's trading about 7 times.
Michael Wirth also said something else that was interesting. He said that there are too many CEOs per a billion barrel of oil equivalents out there. So there should be some more integration to come, Julian. I'm wondering if you're at all in the oil space here.
No, I mean, I continue to not be in the oil space just because it's really uncomfortable having, you know, all your dependence on commodity. And right now, I would argue that oil is really being determined by a single human being in Saudi Arabia, and that is difficult to make an investable case for it. But I do think there's absolutely more to come for this space. You know, the U.S., generally speaking, is quite explored and pretty picked over, but there are so many of these smaller assets with proven reserves that I think these majors would really like to be able to scoop up. So I think there's more to come. So if anything, this is just good news for the investment bankers.
Or even aside from the majors, Devin, for Marathon, potentially? I mean, there's a lot of reports of Chesapeake for Southwestern.
I think this is reaffirmation of super cycle stuff. This is, and again, I think what this did for Chevron, like the headline could be scary for folks that said, hey, look, they're at it again. They're trying to buy growth at all costs. First of all, they didn't overpay. There's a 3% premium to the market on one of the most valuable assets. And again, their Guyana assets are some of the best high-quality long-term growth assets. And that's what they're doing. They're increasing the dividend yield. So if you look at the growth, we're going to go from probably 6% div growth to 8% of growth. This is why you're an investor, not a trader in energy names. I love the deal.
Report October 27th. Remember, it was in February they announced a $75 billion with a B stock buyback. Chevron, they're great companies that trade at less than a market multiple. They should be trading more richer than they are, and they're not. Stocks go higher.
There's a lot more fast money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
A big week for Bitcoin as the crypto keeps climbing. And some related names are riding the coattails. The action in that space next. Plus, a tax probe in China. As a key iPhone supplier gets targeted, the impact it could have on Apple's production, and what it means for the tech titan ahead. You're watching Fast Money, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Bitcoin rising more than 5% today, topping $31,000 for the first time since July. The cryptocurrency extending its gains from last week as investors await news about a spot Bitcoin ETF. The optimism driving related stocks like Marathon Digital, MicroStrategy, and Grayscale Bitcoin Trust higher as well. Bitcoin's big bounce, meantime, making waves among options traders today. Mike, you're looking at Coinbase.
Yeah, this one traded more than two times its average daily call volume, calls out pace puts by over 3-1. Most of that activity concentrated in the weekly 80 strike calls, a lot of retail purchases in there. About 19,000 trading for just under $1.40 a contract, buyers obviously making speculative bets that the bounce we saw today could continue. And as you pointed out, Marathon Digital, Riot, and MicroStrategy were among those names that also saw significantly above average options activity on the bounces that we saw today.
What do you think about Coinbase, Guy?
I think it's interesting. You know, basically at this level, this, I don't know, $78 to $80 level since the middle of 2022. You've been going sideways, creating this bottom. All you need is some incremental good news, and this stock goes up 15, 20%. We've seen it before, by the way, over the last couple of years. I'll tell you, I think Robinhood on November 7th, given where we are, is interesting as well.
Well, and the incremental good news, I mean, there are catalysts out there on the regulatory side, right and left for them. And I'm long Coinbase from around these levels over the last 3 months. And I just think that the correlation to the underlying is still too strong. There aren't the other options. They've had so much bad news priced in. I kind of like that optionality.
Coming up, tax troubles in China, a major Apple supplier under investigation, why regulators are targeting the manufacturer and what it could mean for iPhone production ahead. Plus, could next year's summer blockbuster season be in danger? The lasting impacts of the ongoing actor strike and why it's crunch time for the studios to make a deal. We got the details in Fast Money Returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks finishing mixed to kick off the week. The Dow falling nearly 200 points. The S&P down about 0.2%. But the Nasdaq snapping a four-day losing streak up nearly 0.3%. Chemical manufacturer FMC Corp dropping more than 13%, slashing guidance. The company also launching a cost structure review. That stock is down more than 53% this year. Walgreens, meantime, jumping more than 3% after an upgrade to overweight at J.P. Morgan. The analyst raising the price target to $30, saying today kicks off a new era for the stock as a new CEO steps in. Shares are down more than 41% this year. And Chinese stocks continuing to sell off, the CSI 300 index hitting its lowest level since February of 2019. And speaking of China, Apple supplier Foxconn coming under increased scrutiny by authorities there. The company saying it will cooperate with the government following a report that officials are conducting tax audit inspections and reviewing land use of Foxconn subsidiaries. This coming against a backdrop of mounting political and competitive pressures, with the company's founder also running in Taiwan's upcoming presidential elections. Let's get more on the potential impact of this investigation with DeWardrick McNeil, Managing Director at Longview Global and a CNBC contributor. DeWardrick, great to have you with us. Help us understand why the Chinese government wants to torpedo Terry Goh's candidacy.
Thanks for having me, Melissa. Let's step back and start with the investigation. As you point out, they claim it's for land use violations. There may be some there, but as you point out, Melissa, this strikes me as a politically motivated investigation into Honghai, a Foxconn subsidiary in China. And the timing is unique here, Melissa. We're about 2 months away from a very critical presidential election in Taiwan. And Mr. Guo, Terry Guo, the founder of Foxconn, is a declared candidate. And in his August announcement, Melissa, he was pressed by the press. So they asked him, do you feel like you would be pressured by China given how important China is to Foxconn? And he pushed back pretty aggressively and said, A, he would not be bullied by China. He cited some of the important customers he had, naming Apple and Amazon and Tesla, and said, Melissa, it would be up to the Chinese government to explain to the world why these very important companies' supply chains were impacted by their action. Very reminiscent of the Jack Ma October 2020 comments, and we all know how that went down. And then finally, Foxconn has made a big showing over the last 2+ years of diversifying their supply chains outside of China, here in the U.S. in Wisconsin and Lordstown, Ohio. And the CEO recently said that India could account for up to 20 to 30% of Foxconn's manufacturing base. So these sorts of statements are not going to go unnoticed by the central government in China, Melissa. So I suspect some of this we are seeing is sort of an attempt to really fire a shot over the bow for Mr. Guo.
DeWardrick, it's Tim. So in your notes, really fascinating statement, or you'd say tough talk in Washington, sweet talk in Beijing seems to be kind of what's going on. And this dichotomy is fascinating. Do you think there is tough talk pressure on U.S. corporations to hold ground, to hold up at least, you know, American democratic principles in terms of doing business around the world on those companies? And we were all talking last week about Tim Cook's visit to China and also the Jon Stewart show that might be, you know, taking a shot at China and why maybe that show was pulled. Is there pressure on U.S. corporates anywhere in this country to act a little bit, to act more definitive in terms of American democratic principles around the world?
Well, certainly, I don't think that that's an official government position, Tim. But to your point, we have seen customers, we've seen shareholders really take a look at how countries behave and where companies are invested, and to try and put some pressure on companies to have some principles, to have some standards. But in China, there seems to be a bit of a double standard here. As you note, many companies fall behind that we're following the local guidelines and local laws. But the real challenge, Tim, is when Chinese laws are in contradiction with U.S. or other laws, which ones take precedent? And companies are in a tough spot trying to figure that out. If they act in one way, there could be repercussions in China. If they act one way in China, there could be repercussions here. So I don't envy them, but I think everyone is paying closer attention to these issues around values and human rights and how national security is impacting the business bottom line.
We've seen a bank run in China. They cut their deposit rates, banks, for the third time this year. Government stimulus package, tax cuts, all suggest their economy is ratcheting, not to a halt, but slowing down. That scares me because I think when economies slow down, the next thing is, how do we get ourselves out? What are your thoughts in terms of this China-Taiwan situation, which continues to sort of flare up?
Well, I think to your point, it's always there. So we may pay attention to it in these sort of flashpoints and flare-ups, as you described it. But this issue is always right there above the surface here. This latest round, I think, just says to me that China is concerned about this upcoming presidential election. It looks like, for now at least, the current ruling party, the DPP, will win that election again. That's not an outcome that China favors. So I think businesses shouldn't take their eye off the Taiwan ball. I don't expect that there's going to be any sort of an invasion scenario, but we're going to continue to see tension and pressure ramp up the closer we get to the January election.
Dvorak, always good to get your take. Thank you.
Dvorak, thank you,
McNeil.
Melissa.
What we saw in Apple shares today, we did see pressure relative to the mega cap tech stocks. It underperformed, although finished the day higher. It actually snapped what would have been its longest losing streak, Mike, since January of 22. And I'm just wondering, you know, how you sort of factored this risk in. We've said on this desk for a very long time that China or Beijing just needed to decide that it wanted to poke Apple. And you could really feel the impact. And here we are.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, obviously, in Guo's case, a situation where essentially throwing down the gauntlet, and that's always a dangerous thing when you're dealing with governments, even free, liberal, and open and democratic ones. That's a dangerous exercise. We've certainly seen in Saudi Arabia, we've seen in Russia, and we've seen in China that challenging more autocratic governments is an even bigger risk. And so obviously that presents a risk somewhat to Apple. But if I'm thinking about Apple, and actually I think Tim was kind of alluding to this, they've got plenty of risks, including this, you know, as we look forward towards their earnings, which we're going to be seeing in November.
Yep. Coming up, you might be pining away for this past summer, but movie studios are already looking ahead to next year. But with actors still on strike, the 2024 blockbuster season is facing some heavy pressure. We've got the latest on the negotiations next. And speaking of blockbusters, you won't believe how much money Taylor Swift's concert film pulled in after its second weekend. The stunning stats when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Could movie studios be in for a cruel summer? Taylor Swift's concert movie bringing crowds to theaters, but with the actor's strike now surpassing 100 days, it is crunch time for studios to get ready for next summer's blockbuster season. Julia Borson joins us here on set to explain. Julia, welcome.
So great to be here on set. But you are right, Melissa. The pressure is on not just to salvage any television for the broadcasters this TV season, but to get a deal done in the next few weeks so that the studios can finish up their big blockbusters and get them ready for the next summer season, which technically starts for the box office in May. Now, tomorrow, the Alliance of Studios are returning to the negotiating table after talks broke down about 2 weeks ago. A push for a deal is being led by four key CEOs: Disney's Bob Iger, Warner Brothers Discovery's David Zaslav, Universal's Donna Langley, and Netflix's Ted Sarandos. Now, this comes as Milken estimates that the Hollywood work stoppage has already had more than $6 billion in economic impact. And experts are warning that the cost to the industry couldn't just continue, but actually could accelerate if the actors don't get back to work. Goldman Sachs saying, quote, "We expect that previously announced 2024-25 films could move dates as Hollywood prioritizes ramping back up certain productions over others going into 2024. And this all depends on when the actors strike is resolved." So we're going to be listening very carefully in earnings calls for any commentary on the cost of the strikes. We'll hear that the media companies have saved on production, but we're going to be listening for impact on TV advertising, as well as, of course, box office revenue, because we have no actors out there promoting these films.
Yeah. So what is sort of the window in which they have to resolve it in order to get that summer blockbuster slate out there?
Well, look, there will be movies next year no matter what. But if you look at what it costs to finish some of these big films, some of them may be somewhat done, some of them maybe need a couple of reshoots or need actors to do voiceovers. But you want to have the certainty before you ramp up production. And it takes a couple of weeks once you know that a deal is done to get production ready to go again, and then to get actors back in on sets or on location. So if you look at also the fact that in December things pretty much shut down, you want to get things started now so you can get a little bit of production done before the holidays. And then remember, if you're going to have a movie come out in, say, May, you need it really to be done months in advance of that.
Yeah. What are you listening for in the earnings calls to give us some clues as to what the costs will be?
Well, I think there's one question, which is, what is the cost to the TV season this fall? Broadcast television traditionally has a ton of new shows. We saw a lot of reality fewer scripted shows and sort of a shift of the broadcast season. We'll see if there's any commentary about whether that was a cost. And then we'll also see if they're talking about the box office being lower because they held back films and they didn't have movie stars around to promote the ones that they did release. So I think right now there's going to be more commentary about cost savings. They weren't producing anything. They saved a lot on that. But I think that the long-term cost of the industry, you don't want to train audiences not to go to theaters. And I think that's really the concern about summer 2024.
But, and Julie, it seems like Netflix has trained audiences to not necessarily expect traditional actors, right? So if you think about it, what's the talk in Hollywood behind the scenes as to who's in the pole position? Or when, what are actors saying in terms of, you know, boy, I feel left out, or I'm getting a knock on this door, or, you know, insight there?
Well, look, the real feeling in Hollywood right now is everyone wants to get back to work. But the actors want to make sure that they secure enough gains to make it worthwhile for them that they've been out on strike for so long. It's been interesting because we've seen huge movie stars like George Clooney come in and say, hey, let me help broker a deal. Let's make sure that the most high paid movie stars are not are sort
back.
Of part of this, are giving back and making sure that money flows first to the lower paid stars. So I think that that's a big piece of this and some of the efforts by George Clooney and others to make sure that there's more more of their big earnings going to cover things like health insurance and others was a big effort. I think AI is still a big sticking point. And at the end of the day, this is really about the transition to streaming and making sure there's compensation for the shift to streaming. And I think people want to protect themselves for what they fear is a coming shift to AI as well.
Julia, always great to see you, especially in person.
Yeah.
It's great to be here.
Market site.
It's fantastic. We all started around the same time.
Are you going to say royalty? Mount Rushmore?
No, she is.
What's going to...
Well, a lot of people don't know. JB started around the same time Fast Money was created. I'm just saying that. So that's sort of inside baseball. So it's great to have her here, number one. Number two, now it's make or break time for Netflix because this level that we traded up to 15% in like a week, we're at now the third point of a downtrend from July highs of 480. So if Netflix is going to flex, has to do it now.
And real quick, Cruel Summer. Who was the first one that sang that song? I give you a clue from the Karate Kid movie.
That doesn't help. Bananarama.
Wow. Holy cow.
See, that's what happened
she did
to you,
it.
Julia.
She does this all the time.
Julia.
Panel. Extraordinary.
Executive producer in my ear, Trusty. Julia, thank you. Coming up, it's a trap. Chartmaster Carter Worth joins us to break down the names that are worse than pair of twos. They are a bunch of bull traps. The technical tale next. Fast Money's back in two. Welcome back to Fast Money. Some charts out there are more devious than your usual pair of twos. The Chartmaster says they're bull traps. Carter Worth is here to help us make sure we don't get snared. Carter, what are you looking at?
Never good to get snared. So, as distinct from value traps, which of course are weak stocks that are so tempting, they're cheap, and they end up being traps. A bull trap, and we'll look at some examples, is something that's been very strong, and yet the strength was a trap. It draws money in, it looks as though it's finally broken out, and it only reverses hard. So we're going to look at four or five examples, and then one that I think is a prospective bull trap. So if we go to the charts, we'll start with an ETF, and the first one here is the ITB, the home construction. This is now down almost 20%, but it's a textbook example of something that's strong. Remember, the market has yet to make a new high, right? And it tries to break out, draws in capital, and it's a trap. It reverses hard, down again 20%. Look at another ETF, another sector or theme. Look at XLI. It's the same thing. Now, it looks, again, people are positioned, it's going, it's making a new high, it's leading, there is no recession. The market can't make a high, but it is, and it only reverses. Now it's down some 11%. Let's go to a stock or two, the biggest one of all, Apple. Apple broke out. It had a lot of price target raises, upgrades, and yet it's down 13%, a classic bull trap. Or something completely different. Look at an alcoholic beverage like Constellation Brands. I'm trying to be eclectic in the choice to make the point that it's a circumstance that has no regard for market cap or type of business. It makes the high, it breaks out, draws in, and then it reverses. Finally, look at even different yet again, cruise ships. I mean, Royal Caribbean's down 30%, and yet on a technical basis, one could have made the case it's a textbook breakout. And so bull traps are just that, a snare. They're treacherous. Let's look at NVIDIA. It is a big stock that has broken out, and the risk here is that this, too, is a trap, that this is adored, it's loved, and it is perhaps, and I think this is the right, if you're long, you got to hedge. And or just buy some puts and play for a speculative break. It looks like it has all the elements of a prospective bull trap.
Carter, may I ask you, in terms of the other examples of bull traps that have snared people, did you think that they looked like that they were going to reverse hard, or did it look so textbook in terms of the breakout that there was a moment in time where you thought, you know what, this could be it for these stocks?
So interestingly, happily, we did not publish on a single one of those names as a prospective breakout. And that wasn't necessarily a great insight, a little bit of luck, a little bit of insight, but here's what it was. When all those stocks were breaking out, there were so many things that weren't confirming it. Banks and biotech and the Chinese market and so many things that were struggling. It felt like a trap. And so we specifically did not publish on any breakout candidates over the past 3-4 months for that very reason.
All right. Carter, thanks. Carter Braxtonworth of Worth Charting. Julie, does NVIDIA tempt you? Could it snare you, perhaps? Has it already?
You know, I think the thing about NVIDIA is you have to think is where is that incremental buyer that's going to help push this stock up further, right? I think there are a lot of people who are on the sidelines who are just like, man, I absolutely miss this name. And I think fundamentally, you can really make the case that of the AI companies in mega tech, this is the only one that's actually experiencing growth right now. So it makes sense.
All right. Up next, final trades. Final trade time, Julie Beal.
You know, CoStar recently announced it was purchasing a number three player in the UK retail market. But look, honestly, Rightmove is the name player. That's the one.
Mike Coe.
Cloud, AI, even streaming in a decent valuation. I like Alphabet, Google.
Tim.
TTE, Total Energy. Again, these integrateds look great in this environment. This deal flow favors them.
Guy.
Fills down early, a lot of time. SPR, I think the bottom is in, Melms.
All right, thank you for watching Fast Money. See you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Fast Mad Money with Jim Cramer. Starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Fast Money Disclaimer.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.